Hello and welcome to Patterns and Practices SharePoint Guidance V2 Drop Number 7. I'm Francis Chung and I'm accompanied by
Aaron Vandervelk.
Let's jump into what we have done this iteration. So we took a look at logging and tracing. We took a look at various syncs that you can log to and how and when they should be used. We took a look at also the service locator, which is kind of something we also looked at in V1. We'll see how we've changed it in V2. And we'll also take a look at the partner site directory here. This is a class that really pulls together a lot of the functionality that is required in order to figure out what partner the current user is and other partner-specific information. Right.
One of the things we did with regards to logging and tracing is to compare the two together and see when you would use either logging or tracing and how we would want to implement this in a SharePoint environment. So first of all, if you compare logging and tracing, they are somewhat similar because they both write information about the state of your application to a certain location. But if you closely look at it, the intent and the consumers of both are quite different. Logging, for instance, really targets IT pros. And what IT pros want from a logging infrastructure is to get an idea of the health of your application. And IT pros haven't really developed your system. So if an IT pro sees an error message that says object reference not set in method foo, he really doesn't know what he has to do with that. So an IT pro is really more interested in messages that help him to find out what's wrong with his system. For example, could not access the database because of a certain issue, or could not reach this web service because the network is down. Well, those are messages that an IT pro can really act upon. Whereas a developer might be much more comfortable with debugging information like call stacks or variable information that's going on inside this application. So logging also goes to a different location than tracing. Logging is typically done to a place that can be monitored by a bunch of tools, like the event log. And there are a bunch of tools available, like SCOM or previously called MOM, to aggregate event logs from different servers together, so an IT pro can get an overview of the health of his entire IT organization. If you compare that to tracing is much more developer-oriented. So a developer might use trace information to find out, okay, there's a particular problem with my application, and what do I have to do to fix this? Now, he can, using all the information in a trace log, he can find out, okay, this particular class or this particular component has a certain issue, and that might pinpoint him in the right direction to start really debugging. The problem with tracing can be that if you use tracing appropriately, you can gather a lot of tracing information. And that's why you might need to be able to adjust the trace levels at runtime, so that your development and test environment gathers a lot of trace information to help you debugging an issue. But a production environment, to maximize the performance, should have the tracing level set quite low. And only if there's an issue that you need to investigate, you might want to bump the trace level up a bit until you find out what's wrong. Tracing information typically is stored in a log file, and SharePoint offers the unified logging service, which allows SharePoint to log a whole bunch of information to a log file on the system. And another difference between tracing and logging is that trace logs typically aren't aggregated. So whereas event logs, there are tools to aggregate those into a central place, the log files and also the ULS logs typically are just looked at on the local system.
We developed the SharePoint Logger to address both the needs of logging and tracing. Based upon the thing you want to log, for example, we have various methods that provide you the different intentions. For example, if you are in an error situation, you can go logger.logError, and that'll give you the intention that you've got a problem situation here, you want to log it somewhere, wherever it's appropriate. And currently in the SharePoint logger, we've got it configured such that errors and warnings are logged to both the event log, the Windows event log, and to the trace log, which is the OLS. In diagnostic cases, where you just want to say that I'm here, maybe you want to say that this user has made it this far, or a certain use case is complete, you probably don't need to push those to the event log and then have it seen by an IT pro. You could probably just want to log that into the trace. So in that case, it's just sent to the OLS or the trace log. Currently, we're using the event log of the application event log, and we're using the event source of the Office SharePoint server, which is out of the box. Now, what we'd like to do is probably create our own event source, but currently out of the box, without having to create our own custom event source, which requires a little bit of setup to begin with, we'll go ahead and use the Office SharePoint server. Unfortunately, in that case, our logs will seem like they're coming from SharePoint. Also, we need to confirm with the product group that the OLS is a recommended sync for tracing messages. We had some feedback that the OLS may not be something that we should encourage people to use as a logging sync. Perhaps that only SharePoint should be able to write to that, and that custom applications shouldn't. We'll confirm that soon. Thanks. Let's jump in the code and see how we've implemented this. In the Microsoft Practices SPG Common project, we have the iLogger interface, and this specifies what types of interactions we expect to have with the logger. We've got the common log statement that you could provide the severity and category as parameters, but we think that most people will be using the log warning, log error, and log diagnostics methods. So log warning provides a message. You can also provide the event ID and the category and so forth. All right, so the first implementation of that is the SharePoint logger, which I think that's the only implementation we've come up with so far. So the SharePoint logger is actually an extension of the base logger. Base logger is an iLogger. The base logger is what provides the actual log warning, the mappings for the various methods to the log statement. And the SharePoint logger really just provides implementations of the log statement. The SharePoint logger decides based upon some knowledge of the severity. Based upon that, it will log to the event log, but it'll always log to the trace log. So here you can see all log statements will hit the trace log, and only if the severity is high enough, in this case the high and medium severity, will it go into the event log. Let's jump into the trace logger. Trace logger is also a logger, and it really provides the ability to write into the OLS log, which I think you'll see right in here. Right. So here you have to register the trace provider, and then we have the custom SharePoint application as the product name, and then we go ahead and write the trace into the OLS trace provider. Let's take a look at that.
This class was originally from the MSDN. There's an implementation there that describes how to write to the OLS log. So we just took that class and used it in here. You have to specify all kinds of flags because it's an unmanaged call you have to make into SharePoint in order to write to the OLS.
Again, we will be confirming with the product group as to whether we should be pursuing this approach. But right now, it's a good example of how you could do it. I think a lot of people do use this approach and it's pretty common. There's a lot of documentation as to how and why to use the OS. One thing that you need to note before using the Traclog is that we actually need to do a run with elevated privileges. We have to elevate in order to write to the OS. So here what we're doing is passing using a lambda expression to call the write log message within the context of an elevated session. All right, so that's the trace logger. Let's take a look at the event log logger. The event log logger, as we mentioned before, writes to the Windows event log. Here also notice that we also have to run with elevated privileges. Here we're calling the write event log entry while elevated. So the event source name right now is the just the Office SharePoint server event source name, because we've chosen not to go with creating your own. That's probably something we'll pursue in the next iteration, how to create your own custom event source and then write to it. But right now, out of the box, it's simpler just to write and pretend like we're SharePoint.
As you can tell in this implementation, we are trying to see if the event source exists and calling the create event source. Only the out of the box, the SharePoint and the application process user doesn't have rights to create it. So we either have to elevate the hosting process user in order to do that, or make sure that these event sources are pre-created.
And even if we try to elevate, that just elevates to the app pool identity, and your app pool identity may or may not have access to create event sources. So there are issues around that. Anything else here? Oh, so here we do a little bit of mapping between the trace severity, which is typical for the SharePoint logging, and the Windows event log severity. So here we're saying that when we log with a medium level, we're going to be using the event logs warning, and everything else between after that will be logged as event log type information. And in the case where we're using the SharePoint high severity and default, so anything else, we'll be using the event log type of error. So that's how we mapped it.
The second thing we implemented in this iteration was a service locator. A service locator allows you to decouple class instantiation from your application code. We already implemented something like that in V1 of this guidance, and we found the need for a service locator in V2 as well. Currently, the implementation looks a lot like what we did in V1, but we might look at making it a bit more flexible, making it actually a reusable component for SharePoint. So what the service locator does for you is it allows you to, instead of, for instance, in the case of logging, instead of that you have to create a SharePoint logger and that your application code relies on a SharePoint logger, what your application code does is it asks the service locator for an implementation of iLogger. And as a consumer, you don't really care what kind of logger you're getting. You're just getting an implementation of a SharePoint log, of an iLogger. And in our case, that's probably going to be the SharePoint logger, but you might, for instance, use Log4Net or Enterprise Library Logging implementation behind this.
So this solves a couple issues. Like you mentioned, it allows you the ability to swap out different loggers. It also allows you to be able to defer the implementation of the logger to a different time. So for example, if you have a different team working on logging, they don't have to provide their implementation of their logger for you in order for you to run your code. So you can create, for example, mock loggers or temp loggers and register them into the service locator and get your code up and running. And then when the logging team is ready, they can go and provide their logger, and you just have to register their logger into the service locator. So you're further decoupling your development with other teams' developments.
Yeah. And this also really helps unit testing, because now you can test your code independent of the logger in this case. Now, it's certainly not limited only to logging implementations. And we're planning to, for instance, all the repositories that we're using, that you also can get instances of a repository through the service locator. For now, we've only added the logging implementation to it. So let's see how we implemented this. I like these kind of...
Take a look at our implementation of service locator. In the Katoso Common project, we'll see the service locator folder. And here is our implementation of service locator. Now, actually, let's take a look at the iService locator interface. Erwin, can you talk a little bit about this?
Yeah. What we did is we took a project from CodeQuest, also a PMP project. It's called the Common Service Locator. And we used the interface from that project here as well. And the reason why we did this is we are providing currently a very simple implementation of the service locator. But there are some pretty advanced service locators and DI containers out there. For instance, Unity or Ninject or whatever. There are several adapters written to accommodate for those different dependency injection containers. So by using this interface, which is a standardized interface, you should be able to plug in your own service locator implementation, which you like.
All right, thanks. So let's take a look at our service locator here. It actually extends the service locator info base.
Again, this class comes from the common service locator. And just makes it easier for you to create your own service locator implementation based on this interface.
Okay. So our service locator is pretty simple. It contains a dictionary of type mappings. And it provides you the ability to get access to the single instance of the service locator using the current property. And you have the ability to do to get an instance or to get all instances of a certain type. So for example, if I want to get all loggers, if we had various loggers or if I had a service provider, I can get all instances of that service provider. You have the ability to register. So if you wanted to add a new service to the service locator so that other modules or other features could get access to it, you could add it here. And you have the ability to reset. Let's take a look at how that's actually being used. First, let's find out how we're actually populating the service locator. Currently, it's all being done in the reset method, and we only have one type mapping being added right now, and it's being added through code, and it's being added right here. So we're saying that if anybody asks for an iLogger through a doGet instance or through one of the generic overrides, we will return an instance of the SharePoint logger. Now we can also provide insert the type mappings through configuration, but right now we're just doing it through code and we're doing it in the reset method. Let's take a look at how we're actually consuming the service locator. In the web part, in the discounts web part, you can see here in the constructor, we're actually populating the logger by calling into the service locator, the one instance of it, and then calling a get instance of something of type iLogger. This will provide us something. We don't know at this point. The discount web part should be concerned that the actual implementation is the SharePoint logger. I just need something to log. And then once it has the logger down here, for example, we're in an error situation. Product SKU has not been provided to this web part, so we need to log that. And so all that the web part developer needs to know is that you have the ability to log error, or you could log a warning, or log a diagnostics. So here we're logging a warning that, in this case, there are no discounts available for this user, for this SKU. So that's all that the web part developer needs to know and the service locator shields that developer from knowing that. And then this allows us to substitute a different logger at a different time. If, for example, if we create a new version of logger.
And one thing that we might want to consider is providing an enterprise library-based logger that you could plug into this RI and would allow you to do logging the enterprise library way instead of doing our simple SharePoint logger way.
And as Erwin mentioned before, this also allows the ability to unit test this discounts web part. Because now that we're not hard-coded to a specific concrete logger, we can actually pass in or register a mock logger. So when this discounts web part is tested, it'll actually use or write to the mock logger, which, let's say, doesn't need anything configured.
Right. Now, one other thing to note is that while we are explicitly logging warnings and errors here, that logging warnings and errors are typically tied very closely with exception handling. And we're tackling exception handling in a lot more depth in the next iteration. So be sure to keep tuned what we're doing there. Okay, so the last thing we want to talk about is the partner side directory. Now, this is a class that we created while refactoring some of our logic, because we found that in several places in our reference implementation, we needed to access partner-specific information, such as the ID of the partner or the URL to their site collection. And because that was scattered out throughout our RI, it was kind of unclear how that worked. So we've, for now, grouped this all into a single class. And our vendor SME, subject matter expert, Charles Cho, is going to talk about the implementation of this.
Okay, thanks, Erwin. So I just wanted to talk about the partner site directory component that we built out. Like Erwin said, it came out because there was many different places throughout the application where we needed to figure out some information about the currently logged on users' partner information. So for instance, the ID of the partner that the currently logged on user is with, as well as the URL for the site collection for the user's partner. So let's look in the code. So we have this class called Partner Site Directory, and the two main functionality of this code is to get you the current partner ID and the URL for the current partner. So the first thing we will go over is get the partner ID. And the main functionality of this code really is in this execute query method. So a little context around the implementation of execute query. We had a list that contains our mapping of partners and their URLs for their partner site collections. The currently logged on user's partner identity is really wrapped in its role membership. So for instance, if you're an FBA user, like an external partner account, your partner, how we identify you as a partner is in your role. If you happen to be a Windows user, we would encapsulate your partner, who you are as a partner in a Windows group. So using those two pieces of information, we're going to try to match up the current user's roles to a partner in our partner site collection mapping. So in the execute query, we're going to just look inside of a list called site collection mapping. It iterates through the currently logged on user's roles. And for each role, it checks to see if that role is in the site collection mapping list using a standard SP query here. If it happens to find a matching item in our site collection mapping list for the current role, it will return that as the partner information for the currently logged on user. So once if it finds a matching list item, it will return it back to the calling method. So in the calling method for get partner ID, if it happens so that the get execute query doesn't find a matching item for the currently logged on user, we'll log an error, and then we'll throw an application exception back to the caller of this method. So the other method, get partner site collection URL, basically does the same logic. The only thing different is that once it finds an item, instead of passing back the ID of the partner, it passes you the site collection URL for that partner's collaboration site.
Right. Well, there's a couple interesting things to note. One is that we are using the service locator to get a logging implementation and log certain information. So this allows us, again, to decouple the logging from the actual implementation. And the other thing to note is that currently we wanted to put all these methods in a central location because they were spread out throughout the application at first. And that was one refactoring. And we might even take this refactoring a bit further if we want to continue using the service locator. For example, make the partner site directory not a class with static methods, but make it a class behind an interface and use the service locator to get it in the places where we need it. But this was the first step to centralize it in a central location.
We can also refactor it. Can also continue refactor it by putting the site collection mapping behind a repository instead of having the camel query in this class.
So you see, we're taking a true agile approach to developing this solution. All right, thank you, Charles. And this brings us to the end of this webcast. And this was a webcast on PMP SharePoint Guidance V2, Drop 7. In this drop, we addressed some logging and tracing. We showed you the service locator that we've created, and we also showed you some of the refactorings that we've been doing, so the partner site directory that we've created. Now, if you've become interested in our guidance, please look us up at coplex.com/SPG. And this was Aaron Vandervelde.
And Francis Chung.
Thank you very much for watching.